All right, guys. Well, again, it's super good to be with you guys. I remember at some point during studying Proverbs last year, I can't remember exactly when, but it just became so clear to me, I want to study a gospel. I just knew we had to study a gospel. And I prayed about it and thought about it, and eventually the Gospel of John just emerged as the one where I really felt like that was what the Lord had for us. And I just love the fact. I mean, we've spent some time over the previous years, Romans, Philippians, last year Proverbs, and now we're in the Gospel of John. I love the places the Lord's taken us, but I especially love the fact that we're going to be spending the fall and then the spring just looking at Jesus, hearing his voice, seeing what he did, what he still does to this day. That's what we're going to do. I want to invite you guys along for the journey. One thing I don't want to do is to make you think that because you skipped a couple weeks or whatever, or even, you know, skipped months on end, that for some reason you can't come back in. You're always welcome as part of this. Do not let the excuse of, oh, I missed last week, I'll be kind of out of order, and these guys will be ahead of me. Do not let that keep you from coming. If you come once, perfect. You'll still get stuff out of it. But I also want to make sure that for you guys that do want to make it a commitment to be out just about every week, I mean, even I'm going to miss a week. I know that much already, looking at my schedule. Even I know at least one Wednesday night I'm not going to be here. We'll still have study, but what I'm saying is our schedules can all be tricky. We all miss a week here and there, but I encourage you as much as you can to consider making it a commitment to be in here every Wednesday night, to being a part of this, and to making the travel through the Gospel of John, because God's going to do something special. I'm convinced he is, absolutely convinced of it. I'd love to have each one of you, and your relatives and friends too, come out and be a part of what the Lord's going to do. So again, I just want to encourage you in that regard. We're going to do things a little bit different tonight than the rest of our times together. And we're also going to be doing some different things over the course of studying John than we've done in the past 3 years. And those are the times, I mentioned those 3 years because those are the times that I've overseen the study. It won't be all that different. I'm really hoping the differences just allow us and you to get more out of it. That's why we have them here. But let me explain some of them to you. Tonight I'm going to teach first, whereas normally we'll have group time first. If I don't teach first, you guys won't have near as much to talk about in your groups because we're starting off fresh, right? So I'll talk about John a little bit. Tonight we're going to do intro and overview, and then we're off to the races. The Gospel of John dictates how we're going to do this study because there's 21 chapters in John, and we got 22 weeks together. So after tonight, every week we're going to do a chapter. Is that a lot to do? Yes. Is it too much? Absolutely not. If we wanted to, we could do an overview of John tonight and move on, right? I mean, we can spend as little or as much time as possible, and the way that our calendar is laid out tells us that we're going to spend a chapter a week in John. So start next week, chapter one, the whole thing. I'm excited. I'm definitely excited about these things. The differences as far as group-wise goes are this. And you that have been a part of the men's study, a lot of you guys have been a part of it for longer than I have, you'll notice some of the differences. But essentially what we're going to do is this. I'm going to make homework available ahead of time for anybody that's interested. I don't want you guys to get bummed by the thought of doing homework. I don't want you to feel overwhelmed by it. The reason why I'm making it available, a couple reasons. Number one, one of you guys in this room, and I won't point him out to you because you might get mad at him, but one of the guys in this room asked towards the end of the year last year, could we get the homework ahead of time so we can know what we're going to talk about? What am I going to say, no? I mean, come on, what am I going to say, no? I'd rather you guys not study so much. But the other reason is this. I want to make sure that if you want to get a lot out of this, if you want to dig into this, then there's opportunity. Again, you don't have to print up the homework. You don't have to look at the text before you come the night of. No problem. But if you want to, it's there for you. You see, last year, especially with Proverbs, you guys had no idea what we were even going to talk about until we showed up that night. Which has its cons, its negatives. Because now that you guys know and you could print up the homework, in fact, next week's homework is available for you to take home tonight if you want to. We'll also have it up a week ahead of time on the website for you to download and print if you want to do that. But the advantage is, of course, is you guys can read the text, even just looking over the questions without answering them, and you'll be just that much further into digging into what we have, right? And that's a great advantage. In studying the Bible, the best thing you can ever do is just read the text and read it over and over. So chapter 1 next week, I encourage you guys, read it once. Read it twice if you can. If you have it on audio on your MP3 player, listen to it a few times. Let it kind of soak in you. Think about it. Just get a general idea of what's going on. Dig deeper if you want to. But that's one of the things that we're going to do this year that's a little different. The other thing we're going to do is this. There's four guys specifically, actually five, that are going to be leaders of the groups. You guys know how we've done it in the past few years is, however you're sitting right now, I would normally in group time say, okay, group time, go for it. You know, go over your questions. And that's all well and fine, but we're going to do it a little different. We got four leaders, and I'll tell you, or five leaders, I'll tell you who they are in a little bit. I'm going to ask you to be seated at one of their tables if you're not. You know, there's a 4 out of 6 chance that you already are. And they're going to be your leader. And essentially what we're going to do is the questions that we have, we're going to spend a little longer with those questions, hopefully get a little more out of those questions, get some more application. But that's the only time we're going to talk about those questions. When we gather back together, remember we used to dialogue a little more and go over those questions as a group. We're not going to do that. Once you guys have your group time, I'm going to teach, and we'll have some little time of prayer, and that'll be that. So the difference being is that group time, it's longer, but that's the only time that you're addressing those questions. We're not then going to address them again all together. We'll just have some teaching time. I'm open to feedback. I always am. Part of the reason why we're doing this is just feedback I've gotten because you guys are in a place I'm not. And I don't want to just assume that we're doing this, you know, a good way or a right way. So we'll talk about it. But I want you guys to get a lot out of it. One of the reasons we have leaders, too, is just simply so that it doesn't just become talk about work or our hobbies. Those things are going to come up. We got to be real here, guys. If we're just given the pat answers and saying, oh, what's the application here? Oh, I should, you know, read the Bible more. Sure, that's an application, but let's be honest here. Let's be real. We can't afford not to. And I hope you guys are willing to do that. To be honest, to talk. And so the leaders, their job is going to be to make sure it doesn't go too off in some odd direction. And to make sure it just kind of stays on task and that we get the most out of the text that we can so that not no one single person dominates a group, that type of thing. Because I care about you guys. I want you guys to be able to go home and whether it's your wife or whether you're just thinking about it and thinking, how was it tonight? I don't want your thought to be, oh, it's fine if that one person hadn't just talked the whole time about, you know, their bladder problem or their, you know, whatever it might be, you know. Because we got to work together on this one, guys. You know, and the beauty about us studying this text when we're together is we all come from a different place. Let that happen. Our perspectives are important. You're going to have however many people at that table, you're going to have that many perspectives on that text. You're going to get that much more out of it. But we want to stay on task. Now, as far as John and just a couple things I can tell you, and encourage you. I want to encourage you to go ahead and check out the homework ahead of time, at least to look at it, at least to remind yourself of where we'll be at the next week and read it I can encourage you enough to read, say, you know, you go home and over either tonight or tomorrow, the next day, read John chapter 1, because then it can kind of be sitting in you over the week, and you can be thinking about it. You'll have more insight, and you'll get more out of it the next time we meet together. So I really want to encourage you guys to do that. And as far as anything I can do to help you personally, if you want to dig deeper, you want to know commentaries I'm using, I don't have any secrets. I'm just trying to take what I've learned and pass it on. And if you guys want to know commentaries or where I'm coming from, or go to, you know, ask me. I'd be glad to help you with anything as we travel this road. One of the main things, in fact, why don't you turn to John chapter 20. John 20, verse 30 through 31. We have here in these two verses what I really believe, and I've studied the Gospel of John several times. I've had the privilege of being able to teach it in a home fellowship a couple years ago. And the more I read it, the more I'm so convinced that what we have in these two verses is the key to unlocking the Gospel of John. So as we just start to consider what this gospel is about, I want to direct us to John 20, verses 30 through 31. And let's see, would anybody like to read that? Let's see, hand. Rod, go ahead.
And truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name.
Good, good. We will repeat that verse so many times. It's so important. John essentially blesses us with his thesis statement. He tells us why he's writing the book. Any of you who have studied literature at all know that one of the first things you look for when you read a passage is, okay, what's the main statement in, whether it's a paragraph or a book or whatever, what does the author tell us why he's writing? If the author is going to give that away, then receive it. Take it. Why would we make up or come up with our own reason when he's given it to us? And he has. And what I want to point out to you in these verses, as we just begin right now to get our first look together in the Gospel of John, is the fact that the Gospel of John was written with a purpose, and an express purpose. There is a reason that he wrote it, and he tells us why. Essentially, he says this. He says, Jesus did all kinds of signs. Now, what are signs? What are some other words for signs in the Bible?
Miracles.
Yeah, exactly. Miracles, signs, wonders. Powers. You see those words used in the New Testament often. I'm going to point out to you in a little bit that I believe that word signs is perfect. That it shouldn't have been miracles. That it shouldn't have been wonders. That word signs is exactly what it should be. John did that on purpose. But essentially he's saying, hey, Jesus did all kinds of things, but I picked a selected handful. That's important. What he's saying is, hey, I'm aware that Jesus did all kinds of stuff, and I'm aware this is not supposed to be an all-inclusive writing. I'm not trying to include everything Jesus did. I picked certain things and certain words of Jesus for this reason, that you would believe. That's the whole reason for the Gospel of John, that the reader would believe. Specifically, that the reader would believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and that the result of that would be that they may have life in his name. I can't think of one book in secular literature which shoots for a goal that high. Why do you write stuff? Have you ever written in a journal, or have you ever had to write an essay? Why are you writing it? Well, because the teacher said. Why are you writing it? Oh, because I enjoy this subject. Why are you writing it? Because I want to inform people. Why are you writing it? Because I want people to believe and have life. That's a little different, huh? There is a lot of purpose here. And you know what the truth of the matter is it's happened. It's happened throughout the centuries. The Gospel of John has changed so many lives. The purity of it. The power of it. The simpleness of it. I mean, it's amazing that one book could have so much depth and yet be so simple that it would be the one thing you think of when there's a new believer or just someone that's never read the Bible. And what do? You take a bookmark and you stick it right there in John 1 and you say, read John. It's powerful. There's got to be something in that. So our purpose can't be just to know the Gospel of John better. Our purpose has got to be greater, if His is greater. If the purpose of the Gospel is belief and life as a result of that, I pray that for every one of you guys. For belief. And I know many of you. I know many of you have received Christ as Savior. But it's the same goal. That your faith would be strengthened and that your life in Him would be abundant. As Alan Redpath said, salvation is the miracle of a moment, and I'm paraphrasing. But to make a man of God, that's the work of a lifetime. And that's what it is. And that's part of what the Gospel of John hopefully is going to work through us. Abundant life, a stronger belief. These are our goals. Yes, they're high, but God's good. We want to reach that high. We want to expect great things of God. And I think that's what we're going to get. I mentioned to you about the word signs. And they're so important because miracles, when you think of miracles, I mean, healings, raising the dead, water into wine, those are all miracles, right? But specifically and especially in God's eyes, they're signs. Because what does a sign do? A sign points to something. You see, Jesus did those things for a certain reason, to point to the truth. The sign, the miracle themselves were not what it's all about. But the miracle was pointing to something greater, and that's what we have with signs. And that's exactly why these miracles that John selected to put in this book can do what he's said he's going to do, is convince people to believe, because they're pointing to something. They're pointing to something greater. So we're going to ask, when we get to these miracles, John specifically picked a couple good facts just to know about the Gospel of John, or to remind you. John specifically picked 8 miracles that he recorded in the Gospel of John. Some of them are unique to this Gospel. Others were recorded elsewhere in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But he picked these for a reason, hand-selected them. And then the words of Jesus. For example, in John chapter 6, you have what's recorded, the feeding of the 5,000. Now, that's recorded in other Gospels, right? But what you don't have in the other Gospels is what Jesus said afterwards about him being the bread of life. So even though it's not unique to the Gospel of John, we get more insight. And that's another thing that John does. Not just signs, but the words of Jesus. The I am statements of Jesus. There are 7 I am statements of Jesus in the book of John. All of them essential. Because, again, what is the purpose of this book? It's to show us Jesus. You see, John had this crazy idea that if we would see Jesus, we'd believe in him. It's as simple as that. And so he's just recording things that Jesus has done and said and making it clear and just saying, hey, here's who he is. And so we get to see when Jesus says, I am this. I mean, think about it right now. We are in the middle of the campaigns that are going on right now with the elections that are coming up in America. They're fascinating. I mean, they're interesting. I don't care if you care about politics or not, but they get very interesting these days. But what's one of the main things you want to know? Who is this person? I don't want to just see their picture. I don't want to just hear them try to, you know, weasel their way out of a question. Who are they? Well, it's the same thing with Jesus. We ought to be asking ourselves, not what do people think he is, or what do I think he is, but who did he present himself to be? If he presented himself to simply be a good teacher, then let's just call him that. We don't need to make it more. But what did he say he was? If he called himself God, if he said he was the Messiah, then let's take him at his word. But first and foremost, let's find out what he said he is. And don't let people at your work or people that you know from school or wherever it is tell you, oh, Jesus never said this, Jesus never said that. Well, John made it real easy for us. He told us what he said. And we have those great things there. And of course, as we get into those sections, we're going to talk about all those miracles. We're going to talk about those I am statements. You know, it's interesting that a third of the Gospel of John takes place during the last 8 days of Jesus' life. That's an interesting thing. It's like you're going on in the Gospel and you're like, okay, I'm a little more than halfway through, and all of a sudden, boom, it's the Passover. And he records a bunch of chapters of Jesus during that time with his disciples, his final days on earth. Something real fascinating, something certainly the other Gospels didn't do. Another something interesting about this Gospel. Next week, we're going to come face to face with the crux of the whole thing, and that is that in the beginning was the Word. It's Jesus. We'll talk about that. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. No punches pulled. The Word was God. It goes on to give a little more detail into that very fact that Jesus is God. Really, the theme of the Gospel of John is Jesus' deity. His deity. That Jesus in the Gospel of John is presented as the Son of God. He's presented as God. Yet you know what's interesting? His name, his earthly name, the name of the man Jesus, just that word Jesus, 247 times in the Gospel of John. Way more than any other gospel. It's fascinating. So you have the gospel that's all about his deity, and yet you see him in his humanity in a way that's you don't see in the other Gospels either. Very fascinating, very powerful. And plus, I just think it's so interesting that, and Rudy can bear witness to this, and so many of us could say, when someone's a new believer, what do? You take the bookmark, you stick it in the Gospel of John. That tells me something about that book. It's a book that we would give to believers and non-believers, new believers. Same book. Give them all the same book. Interesting. It tells me there's a lot there. And I know we're going to get a lot out of it. One of the questions is, what makes John different from the other Gospels? Essentially, of course, you have the four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. One thing we always need to remember, we call it the Gospel of John. It's the Gospel of Jesus. It's the good news about Jesus, that's what gospel means, and it's Jesus' story told by John, as the others are told by Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And so it's important for us as believers to always remember that there aren't four different gospels, it's one gospel told by four different people, which I hope you guys appreciate, to have different people's perspective, to hear it in different ways, to get it from different people. It's so important. And so, really, if anything, you have a fourfold view of one gospel. Really, you know, it's been said before, there's five gospels because there's the gospel of the Christian that's lived out through the Christian. And how do people read that? Because a lot of times people in this world may never read those first four gospels, but they'll read the gospel according to you as you live your life. But there's one gospel. John is set apart from the others for a couple of reasons. John wrote his later than the other guys did. The first three are very similar. They're called the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And really, what synoptic means is having a common view. You can pretty easily go through Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they record a lot of the same stories. They go along a lot of the same timeline, and they're presented in a lot of the same way. And they call those the synoptic gospels. John's very different. I personally think just one of the reasons why it's so different is John had the advantage of writing his gospel 40 or 50 years after Jesus had risen from the dead, and some 20, 30 years after the last previous gospel was written. So he knew what was out there, right? Chances are he was somewhat familiar with the other gospels. So there wasn't a need on his part to repeat. If anything, it was him maybe probably pretty close to the end of his life, within 10 years or so, and sitting there saying, okay, I saw these things, and I know what's recorded out there, but what do I want to make sure is left for history? What do I want to make sure that I saw in Jesus is left? He doesn't have to repeat himself. It makes the times when he does repeat the other Gospels interesting because he already knew they were there, you know, something to think about, but he had that advantage. So this Gospel is different. In fact, I read in one commentary that over 90% of John is unique from the Synoptic Gospels, which is certainly an interesting thing. And essentially, when you look at all the Gospels, when you talk about their theme, you have Matthew is about the king, the coming king, written specifically to the Jews because they were waiting for their Messiah. Mark was about Jesus being a servant. Luke, about Jesus as a man. And John specifically is about Jesus as God. Important to kind of to know those things and to refresh for those of you that already know it. I want to ask a question too. Who is John? As we get into this, always good studying any book of the Bible to ask yourself, you know, who is this guy? Where did he come from? What? When did he live? When did he write it? Where did he live? What was his experience? Is he qualified to write a gospel? Yes, very qualified. In fact, so grateful that a guy like this did write it because we know, of course, it was written by John, one of Jesus' disciples. One of, I don't know, what, the big dog disciples? The top three? I don't know what you would call them. But remember when Jesus would pull three disciples aside on a couple occasions for the transfiguration? It was just Peter, James, and John. They were the only ones that saw that. This guy saw this. What else did John see? He was there at the Garden of Gethsemane. Remember, he brought them further up than the other disciples and spent that time. John saw and handled Jesus. John was an eyewitness of the crucifixion, of the trial. John was one of the first ones. Remember, he outran Peter to the tomb when they found out that it was empty. He was close. This is a good guy to be writing about Jesus. Perfect. As far as just some simple history, at least tradition tells us, and there's certainly some good indications, that he probably was the youngest of all the disciples. He was a young guy. His brother James, they were the Sons of Thunder. Remember that? Called them the Sons of Thunder. John was most likely the younger. John and James and Peter were a huge part of the early church. We hear about him in Acts there. He was the only one of the disciples that didn't die a martyr's death. That's interesting. And he didn't because history tells us that they actually tried to boil him and it didn't work. Because apparently God had other things planned for him. He hadn't written the book of Revelation yet. They exiled him to the island of Patmos, and that's where he wrote the revelation of Jesus Christ, simply what God showed him. Tradition, and this isn't necessarily history, but tradition tells us that John was in Ephesus when he wrote this book. Just something interesting. I don't know if he was or not, but a lot of people say that he was a big part of the church there and that he probably wrote it there. So just something interesting to think about. Zebedee was his dad. His mother, Salome, likely a sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. It's not for sure, but there's a good chance that this John was a cousin to Jesus. Reading the first chapter of John, you'll see that it looks like he was also a disciple of John the Baptist before John the Baptist actually pointed in Jesus' direction and he went and followed him. So that's something interesting too. John doesn't refer to himself as John in this gospel. He refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved, which is beautiful. I love that. So perfect. Those are a handful of things to get us started.